Welcome, Mary Fortney, to our podcast today. Mary is the campaign manager for Judy Schwiebert, who is an Arizona State Legislator for Arizona State Legislative District 2. So welcome, Mary.
Thank you.
Thanks for coming on, Mary. My first question is, since I don't know much about your job, is this a full-time job for you?
Yes. Actually, right now it is technically part-time. Mm-hmm. I'm waiting for the state party, the ADLCC, to hire me officially. I'm supposed to have an offer letter coming soon. And then it's definitely full-time and then some.
And how did you get to this point? It seems like a pretty big role to be a campaign manager.
Yes.
Maybe even a little bit cutthroat. It doesn't seem like the kind of thing that I'd be able to do. It seems like it's a little bit outside my league, above my pay grade. So I'm curious what road you took to get to this point.
Well, interesting one, and probably not the most conventional. Lots of people go to school, they study poli-sci, they get into politics. For me, it was a little bit different. I do think a lot of folks had the same experience where when they found out who was running for president in 2016, they kind of had a panic attack and felt, how can I help save our democracy and prevent these kind of things from happening? So I started really paying attention to politics. And once you get down to the local level and you start paying attention to what's going on in our state legislature, it becomes clear that people can actually make more of an effect there than they can on a national level. Because you're talking about, like in Judy's district, you're talking about 140,000 registered voters is the pool. So yeah, I got involved a lot with ballot initiatives, petition signing, started working on those campaigns, and I got involved with just organizing volunteers to talk to voters, do canvasses, phone banks, things like that. And last cycle, I worked on Judy's campaign as what's called the field organizer, which basically just does all the voter outreach planning, like I said, the canvases and the phone banks. And it was so inspiring to actually elect a really good person to office. And her campaign manager from last cycle has moved on into the nonprofit world.
Well, it's interesting that you had that progression from grassroots right down from just being a voter and very quickly rising up into it without, as you said, the traditional path of going to college and studying. What do they study if you want to go into politics? Is it public policy?
Political science and public policy, usually. They usually do both.
It also leads up to one of the other questions I had, so I'll just throw that in there now. Why is the state legislature important? It seems like a lot of the emphasis is placed on federal, and most of the news is dedicated to federal rather than local, especially here in Arizona. That's how it seems to me. So why is the state legislature important?
Yes, that's an excellent question, because you're right. Obviously, the money to be made from news and campaign finance and everything else is at the federal level. That's where all the big money is. And that's why that's what we hear about all the time. And everyone's eyes, like mine were, are on presidential, Senate races, sometimes congressional races. But if you take a look, especially of what has happened since the 2020 election, you can see that not just in Arizona, but in many other states, the laws passed at the state legislature level are the ones that actually affect our lives. Mm-hmm. And those are the ones that they are like trying to get people to override the filibuster so they can put some federal protections in place for that. But if we didn't pass those horrible laws at the state legislature to begin with, we wouldn't need that. I mean, the Texas abortion law, all the voter suppressions throughout, I think it's 30 something states that have passed laws limiting access to voting. Now many states are trying to imitate the Texas abortion ban law.
Really? I didn't know that.
Yes.
Right here, there's a 15-week ban that's moving through the state Senate right now. So if we had good legislatures at the state level, they would pass values relative to the people, and we wouldn't have to try and count on the federal government, which is like a slow moving behemoth, to actually get its act together and protect us.
And far away as well.
Sure.
My opinion, I have somewhat conservative roots, politically speaking, and I've always felt that local is where you start because local affects your life. And I don't want someone telling me what to do who doesn't understand the local on the ground reality. Mm-hmm. And that's just one of my small pieces of conservative views. It's a little scary, especially now with what's going on in the news, to think how close we were to having an official election overturned by crackpots, but that was stopped by the local governments. You know, the local Secretary of States in mm-hmm. a lot of Republican states mm-hmm. and the governors went ahead and followed their duty. But, you know, you flip a couple of those and put some crackpots in there, and that could have turned out very differently. And that's a little scary. So I think that also goes to the, or just reinforces the idea of you got to control your state legislature. Otherwise, you can't control the federal. You don't even have any input on it.
Yes, that's an excellent way of stating that.
Since we're on the political agenda, I noticed some of the information regarding what you guys are working on now is something it sounds so typically political, and I don't even understand what it means, but it seems like what the legislator is talking about now is the aggregate expenditure limit, which has to do with schooling and education, and is one of those things where it should always be bipartisan in my mind because education is where we start as a civilization.
Mm-hmm. Right.
But can you explain to me what that is and why everyone's talking about it now?
Sure. Way back in 1980, and this was passed by the voters, which means it was a ballot measure that we had to vote on as a proposition, they put some spending limits in the state constitution. And so there was a cap on public education spending. And it came to light so quickly because of the fact that the Prop 301 money that we got several years back, which was sales tax money, was prior not subject to this rule. And now, these are really technical things that probably require a lawyer to explain, but due to what happened with Prop 208 and that passing the ballot in 2020, the pot has kind of been reshuffled. And so now all the monies are counting towards this limit, which means all of a sudden we are over an archaic limit that we've never been over before. And if you think back to 1980, how could you anticipate what you would need to spend on technology safety measures due to all the increased gun violence and threats? Security and technology is just a huge piece. And so money that has been approved last year in the legislature for each district to spend is now all of a sudden not available due to this rule. They would technically be breaking the law if they spend this, which is about approximately 15 to 17% of the budget. So the legislature can take action. They can override this. They can waive it. They can rescind this law. It does need two-thirds vote, two-thirds majority to do that, since it was voter approved, which is amazingly tough to do because there's that bipartisanship again. It should be bipartisan, but these days and political games are played. And
this seems like such a bizarre situation, though, because if I'm understanding it properly, there are a couple things that are going on. One, in 1980, for some inexplicable reason, they decided that there should be an absolute cap on spending on education. Or not an absolute cap, I think it was percentage-wise. I don't know why you'd ever want to do that in the first place. From a conservative viewpoint, that's just extra legislation that you don't really need, right? If you want to spend more on education, we can do that. If we want to spend less, we'll do that. It seems like more you would want to put in a minimum amount that you want to spend on education rather than a maximum. Two, there are other streams that you mentioned coming in to the education budget, which is been a problem for this. And 208 is one measure you mentioned, which is I voted for what last year or the year before, which is putting a small increase on income tax on the wealthy to pay more for education. Because our education, I don't know if people are aware of it, but here in Arizona, we are not exactly at the top of the list when it comes to education. I think we are number 49 out of 51, because the DC is counted in there as well, states and District of Columbia. So we're at the bottom of the list as it is. So if any state should be spending more on education, it seems like maybe it should be Arizona, or at least putting more effort into it.
Yes.
And that was passed by voters, and it seems like it's coming to a head. I don't understand why we can't just... I guess the other part that really weirds me out is the current budget for the schools was passed by the legislature, and this is what's being contested now. It's like, oh, now that we have too much money in the system, it's going to literally break the law and we have to take that money out. I can't imagine people just seeing this and saying, hey, you know what, let's take a breath. Let's get this passed resolution so we can get past this. And if we need to fix it next year, we'll fix it next year. But let's not put the jeopardy of being able to finish the school year at jeopardy right now. I don't get how anybody can be against that.
Yes, you're talking sense. You're talking sense here. I will tell you that school privatization has been the goal of our governor, the goal of the American Legislative Exchange Council, ALEC. I don't know if you've heard of them.
Yes.
Okay, of course you have. They write many bills that focus a lot on privatization. Schools and prisons are two of their favorites, and they try to pass them throughout the country. They like to pick Arizona as their proving ground and start with some things here. Our governor is very friendly to that. This is another opportunity to put another cut into our public schools and just continue to try to, I really believe that the goal is eventually to just let them starve. You know, they're basically starving them to death.
Okay, you put that in perspective. It makes a lot more sense what their motivations are now to me. And they don't seem to be working terribly well, again, since we're at the bottom of the barrel when it comes to education as a state. And as parents, we've been watching my son go through this for the past 16 years, and it's been a bumpy ride. I think he's now at a good school, which is a charter school, but it's an old charter school. He's been to public schools. He's been to two other charter schools. So this is the fourth school he's been in Arizona, which is, you know, a pretty big
bounce.
He's bounced around a lot. Oh, no, fifth. I'm sorry, fifth. So I don't think Arizona's got it right yet. And I think, you know, let's get the basics done before we start experimenting.
Yes.
I guess we're all in agreement there.
Agree. I agree 100%.
I looked at some of Judy's tweets and they seemed like they were informative. But what really kind of blew my mind was there are a lot of trolls following her. Her comment section is kind of a dumpster fire.
Yes, there are. And being an elected representative, she does not really want to block people.
Right.
So she just kind of leaves them there. You know, like I said, legislative races are kind of small potatoes. So we obviously don't have a communications director or someone that knows how to really address those things.
Right.
If you've got any tips.
Do you have tips, James? That sounds like up your alley.
Only if you have time. I mean, you can engage with these people, but you have to have the time to de-escalate them or just to point them in the right direction. I think the easiest thing to do is to simply be able to give them a link to a study or a bill or something that actually has the facts that they're usually wrong about to basically be able to correct them. And then if you get that going, you know, you usually see the same things coming up over and over again. So you can have a list of things and a list of canned responses, but it takes time to develop that. And you need someone to be able to do that as well, to be able to monitor it. Mm-hmm. So if you have the time and resources, yeah. But if you don't, it's probably better just to, as an elected official, just to let it roll.
Right.
And to just keep putting the positive message out and letting the trolls, because the trolls, to anyone who's educated, they're obvious trolls. It's the same people over and over again saying the same thing. But this is leading to one pushback I saw in some of that I wanted you to see if you could address.
Okay.
They were saying the schools get enough money from the lottery and other sources. So why should we worry about this? That's the pushback I've seen from the other side. What would your response to that be?
My response to that would be that there's a lot of misinformation out there and it takes root and people keep saying that. The lottery land sales from the Bureau of Land Management, that was another one that was supposed to give public education money. The governor will come out and make this large proclamation that he's going to do these things and public education is going to get all this money. But then they go into legislature and they either pass bills that undo that and direct that money elsewhere, or, you know, it's really not there. It's kind of like a sleight of hand shell game kind of a thing. And so that gets out there and people say that and they believe it, but I do not have the numbers or anything on that. That would require a lot of research, but it's not true. It's not there. They say it's going to be there and it really isn't. But again, is that an argument that's going to shut down somebody that believes that? No, we have to dig up all of those resources, all of those facts, and there's just not time.
Yeah, by the time you've done that, they've already moved on to their next lie.
Sure.
I know that a lot of states have their lottery tied to their education budget, which seems like a weird incentive to me. It's like, oh, go play the lottery more, which is basically throwing your money away to to be educated. But if you're educated, you know that you wouldn't play the lottery.
Mm-hmm.
So if you if you educate your public, they're not playing the lottery, and then they can't fund the education. And then it seemed like a balancing act.
It's funny that they like to push those things. I mean, last year, look at all the expansion of gambling that was done at the legislature. All the things that they could focus on, and sports books is what they focused on. That was their big one.
Well, thank God they did that, because I don't know who else would be advertising to me in my Twitter feed. I don't know why Twitter thinks I want to do sports gambling online, but just a heads up, Twitter, I don't. I'm not interested, but thanks for offering. Yeah, I don't see how that's a public good, but maybe that's just me. Another hot button topic recently, this question goes to that. What is the Arizona legislature doing to expand voter engagement?
I don't believe anything. Somehow they say they believe that by enhancing voter ID and limiting ballot drop boxes and all of these things will give people confidence in the election, and they'll feel more sure that their ballot's going to count and that's going to make them vote. But, you know, in reality, not so much. It's sad because a lot of the people that are really at risk with these policies are on our tribal lands, who with expansion of ballot drop boxes, everyone getting their mail and ballot last year, were able to vote in record numbers. Well, actually, a little more than a year now, 2020. So doing those kind of things just really harm them, because it's difficult for them to vote up there. You know, they might have one polling place for how many miles, and they don't all have transportation, and you can't give your ballot to your neighbor. You know, it's got to be your family member or someone that lives with you. You can't do that. And so I would say they're not doing really anything to expand voter engagement. I know Senator Martin Quezada, who's in the minority, runs bills every year to do things like automatic voter registration for 18-year-olds and, you know, different ways to improve access to the ballot, but it never goes anywhere. So.
Yeah, this is another part of the modern Republican Party. I used to be a Republican. I'm not any longer, and this is one of the reasons. Because as a core conservative aspect of democracy is being able to vote. And making that easier seems like the goal, that's what the goal should be. And it's one of the things I loved when I moved to Arizona was I was able to vote by mail with no problem. Except for the last election, I didn't get my mail-in ballot until a couple of days before the election. And I was so used to having literally a couple of months to go over the ballot before I had sent it in that I didn't even, for the first time in a long time, I didn't vote because I didn't feel like I had enough time to fill out the ballot. I don't even know if it would have gotten back in time. And it was the first time that that's happened.
Yeah.
But again, expanding voting rights seems like a fundamentally conservative concept, because it encourages democracy, encourages people to actually vote. And everyone voting is the basis of democracy. And without that, I don't know how you call yourself an American.
Yes.
That was my little sub-rant, as we call them.
Our sub-rant.
Right.
To that point, James, and you know, you sent over some information about some of the House bills and Senate bills that it looks like, instead of, to me, from what I read here that you sent us, that they're actively looking to suppress. I mean, that there is not a push toward engagement. It's actually quite the opposite. With some of the, is there one of the bills you want to just discuss? I mean, there, you know, House Bill 2238, banning the ballot drop boxes.
Right.
You know, Senate Bill 1133, ban all mail-in elections. I mean, doesn't that hurt everyone across any base?
It does. I mean,
outside of the tribal lands, it affects people like my parents, who are 92, have been politically engaged. And I was telling James yesterday, I stood in line for hours to vote in the primary back in 2016. And there's no way anyone could tolerate that. I could barely tolerate it.
Mm-hmm. You're 100% right. And like James said, mail-in voting in Arizona has been a thing for a long time. I think that goes back to the 80s. At least, and 80% plus, regardless of party lines,
right,
uses the mail-in ballot. So it is true that how can you do that without suppressing all voters? So obviously, it's magnified in certain areas, but it's everyone. It's the Republican that can't get to the polls
exactly,
because they broke their leg or something. anything. So mail-in voting, I think, is crucial, and we're used to it here. And James kind of went over it quickly, but it does give you also a time to be a more educated voter, because you have that ballot in front of you and you can go on your computer and you can research, you can, you know, call your trusted friend that you like to bounce things off of and ask them. If you're in the voting booth, you can't do that.
The other thing I like about the mail-in ballot is it kind of fixes this ridiculous problem that we have in the United States where we don't have a day off for voting. If you disallow mail-in voting, then it becomes ever more incumbent on the legislator to set a day aside so people can go and vote. People who are working otherwise, who don't have a choice to take the day off or don't have the choice to wait an hour or 3 hours or 6 hours to vote. It's a clear area of disenfranchisement, and I can't tolerate that. I don't want to tolerate that.
I agree with that. And obviously, wealthier people that don't have to maybe work two jobs to make ends meet, that aren't shuffling their kids to the daycare to home to their school activities or whatever, would have an easier time of dealing with that. So it appears to be targeted.
Or the person who owns the business can take the day off and, you know, have their manager fill in, and they can go and vote, and no one else that works for them can.
Right.
Right.
Yeah.
That's a small example, but it again, enfranchisement seems like a basic part of American life. And if you're not willing to support that, I don't know what you're supporting. Not talking to you, Mary. Right. Obviously, we're on the same page there.
No, I agree. And it's good to see someone with a more conservative lean to also agree. And what used to be fundamental, nonpartisan American values, right?
Yeah, that's what kind of blows my mind these days. I don't know where they're coming up with their stuff. But it's taking a slightly different tact. Since you're kind of new to politics, what is it in politics that has surprised you, or that what did you think of politics before you got into it and after? Has your mind changed? What was it like, the one or a couple of things that really stood out to you about politics?
I guess I would say that kind of believing the thing that a lot of people believe, which is all politicians are the same. They're really all the same. And you actually get to meet some of these folks like Judy Schwiebert, who's working in the state house. And she really cares about what she's doing. And she puts in the time, whether session is in or session is not in, she's out meeting with her community, and she's not the only one. There are people that actually care and are really doing this as a public service. You don't make much money working at the Arizona State Legislature, that's for sure.
How much do they make?
I think it was $24,000 a year, and then there's some travel stipends and things that kick in if you stay in session longer than 100 days, or I think it is the deadline, but it's really very small. I mean, she many times puts in 12-hour days, so it's really a very small amount. So you have to be doing this as a service and because it's important to you. And it's hard to believe that there are people out there, but there are some.
Yeah, $24,000 a year, that doesn't seem like you can afford either a jet or a yacht. I don't know. how this is craziness.
No, you can't.
And what so far in your career your political career, what's the thing you look back on with notable pride? What was there achievement or something that happened that you really think stands out in your mind?
Well, I'm just going to have to go back again and just say getting Judy Schwiebert elected in the state house in 2020. It was the only state house that went from Republican control to Democrat in the state. And she was an amazing candidate. And I give the credit to her. I don't take the credit for that. I give the credit to her for having strong roots in her community and having a broad base of support, already having many community connections. And she has lots of Republican supporters too, and lots of independents.
That's a pretty good feather in your cap.
That is. It's awesome. Mm-hmm. Mary, can you talk a little bit about the Tier 1 effort that the party is looking at in terms of the certain legislative districts? Could you just talk a little bit about that?
Yes, I would love to talk about that. So the ADLCC was put into place some years back, maybe going on like 10 years now, to get a Democratic majority in the state House and state Senate. At the time, you know, we were far down. Republicans far outnumbered us, probably 2-1 in the legislature. And they've made their gains over the past decade. And so we have gotten now to a place where Republicans hold the control on both sides, Senate and House, by one seat.
Right.
So being able to get that tie would stop some of these bad bills. Mm-hmm. Being able to get a majority would perhaps allow us to get some of our bills passed. So yeah. They look at the overall strategy and the condition of the various districts of the state and decide where do they need to protect their incumbents, where's a chance to pick up a seat. And after redistricting, they named 5 different districts. 4 of them are here in Maricopa County, and one of them is Judy's LD2. And those are all like competitive. So they're within 4 or 5 points max of going either Democrat or Republican.
Okay.
They mostly lean toward the Republican side. Mm-hmm. And that's the same as our district was last year. But District 2 is a 3.8 Republican lean, which is totally winnable with a strong candidate with connections in the community that can actually get their message out and their message is received well. So keeping Representative Judy Schwiebert, as well as Senator Christine Marsh in District 4, who just won in 2020, is a top priority. And those are also places where we might be able to pick up a seat in the House in 4 and in the state Senate in 2. So that is where the state party, the legislative arm of it, will be focused on making sure they have as much staff as they can possibly get, resources, help, you know, access to donor lists, things like that, any kind of support the party can provide. They will focus on those districts and with the goal of keeping what they won recently and maybe picking up 1 or 2 somewhere else.
Perfect. Okay. Thanks for explaining that.
Sure.
The tier one. And so that's a single shot strategy where they're really focusing their efforts on that one candidate that they want to retain. Is that the single shot or?
Yes. The single shot strategy, we could run 2 candidates for House in every district.
Right.
But when it's a close toss up, they generally only run 1 because that gives you a much better chance of electing 1 rather than, you know, 2. So that has not been announced officially yet, but it's kind of assumed and understood that in that tight of a race that's leaning towards the other party, we would probably stick with just running only Judy. And she is the only candidate who has actually filed to run for that seat.
Oh, okay, great.
Yeah, the districts and the districting is a big part of contention, I think, as well. We talked to Ken Clark about that. He educated me a lot on it. And it's the same thing I've heard across the country. You know, districts being redrawn to protect specific incumbents. And that just it's the kind of thing that just drives me crazy. It's not about representing the people, making sure everybody has a fair and equal vote. You know, the parties draw these lines that are arbitrary to anything but corralling the right number of Republicans or Democrats into a given spot so they can protect incumbents. And that kind of stuff just drives me crazy.
Yeah.
Talking a little more about you, Mary, I'm curious, as a campaign manager, what your typical day is like.
Well, it can be pretty crazy. It's good in a sense is that I'm pretty much my own time manager. You know, people need meetings with me. I set meetings and then I work on my work in between. Like yesterday and every day, I get up and I start my day by checking on the donations to the campaign. We are run by lots of small donations. And so we have list of people, donators and supporters that Judy keeps in contact with and, you know, stressing the importance of this race. So she needs to know who's donated so she doesn't call, hey, James, can you donate to my campaign? Oh, I donated 2 days ago. What's wrong with you? So that's kind of like my first thing is that I check and see, okay, and I make sure her lists are all updated. And then I'll send her a quick email or text and tell her everything's updated. If she's got committee meetings, what's your schedule? Are we going to need to touch in on this, that, or the other? And then I work on my work early in the morning, and then I'll start having meetings.
What does your work entail?
Organizing events and canvases. We're out there knocking on doors, getting petition signatures to qualify for the ballot. So that's one of the big things.
Do you have enough petitions yet to get her back on the ballot?
Yeah, we do. But okay. you want to have some cushion to, mm-hmm. you know, account for if someone wants to challenge you. So you want to have enough to make sure that you for sure have enough good, valid, registered voter signatures that you won't get.
Is that normal? Or is that something special that Arizona does?
I think it's pretty normal. Okay. I wouldn't say that for sure, but I think it's pretty normal that people get signatures to get on the ballot. And then I'll have meetings with people. Like yesterday, we're planning the official campaign kickoff party for February 12th. So yesterday, I met our party planner, volunteer. You know, we run mostly on volunteers, and we went to the lady's house who's hosting the party and kind of went over the setup. So I had that meeting yesterday. I had a call with a field organizer, an organizer person on another campaign, and set up some meetings for later in the week with finance person at the ADLCC, organizer person from the Mark Kelly campaign. So, because we try to collaborate when we can and kind of, you know.
So this sounds like a really perfect job for me never to have, because I am not good at trying to juggle all those different balls, right? When I was a designer, you know, I can go in and I can work on one thing for like 3 weeks. It's like, okay, we're going to do a wine glass design this week for the next 3 weeks. We're going to do, you know, start at a 4 ounce and go up to 20 ounce. That's all I have to focus on is one thing for days on end. But having to juggle people and finances and Mark Kelly and all the astronauts. I don't have to deal with astronauts. I mean, that's got to be kind of overwhelming.
Yeah, from astronauts to house party. It sounds like a full-time job already.
I mean, how do you call him? You can't just Zoom call up to if he's up in space.
Yeah, well, trust me, I don't get to talk ever to the actual Mark Kelly. Oh, okay. No way. But yeah, he has to get signatures to get on the ballot too. So obviously, if they can bring 10 people and we can bring 10 people, then we have 20 people getting signatures. So it makes sense.
Yeah,
so
that
we
does.
It does.
So in his case, is it all right if he has like actual aliens support him? Since he's I'm sure he's met them. He's been up there. So
Right.
Why else go? If you're not going to meet little green men, what's the point of going into space? I'm just angry all the time about little green men. You see how unserious this podcast is?
That's great. Well, I'm glad, because I will tell you that I'm pretty darn serious. And
that's good.
It feels good to make life.
We need some adults in the room.
Someone has to be serious. Yes.
That's how you win elections, I guess.
Yes.
Another reason why I shouldn't go anywhere near that stuff. So I had a question for you. This is probably the most important question of the interview. Mm-hmm. Are you ready? Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Burgers or hot dogs?
All right. Well, definitely burgers.
Okay.
But I'll tell you what I really prefer, because I do try to limit my meat intake. Although once in a while, a good burger is great. Portobello mushroom burger. Have you ever had that?
Yes.
No, I can't stand mushrooms. But I love your answer, because you were confident and you gave a very specific answer, and then you completely shifted it to talk about what you wanted to. That was excellent. Love it.
I would argue
I eat a lot of veggie burgers, so I have a pretty broad view of what a burger is. It can be meat-based or non-meat-based. There's just something inherent about the thing itself which makes it a burger. So the portobello mushroom is, I think, a valid point.
And it's making me hungry.
Me too.
Can we go on record as saying that the Judy Schwiebert campaign is against hot dogs?
No, please don't.
No, okay, fine. So much for the tweet.
Can you imagine the trolls then?
Can you imagine? And I have one final question, being that, you know, this podcast started out discussing a lot of things related to art, and kind of to bring it full circle, because, you know, politics, it's all art, right? I mean, what you do is, you know, there's a whole canvas, you even call it canvassing. So we're on the same page,
right?
You know, there's a lot of talk about Arizona being a red state versus blue state versus purple state. Mm-hmm. And we'd like to think it's purple. And so mm-hmm. from an artistic perspective, what shade of purple do you think we're at? Is it leaning more blue? Are there reds thrown in? I mean, is it lilac? Is it old Crayola purple? What is it?
I believe it's more of a bluish purple.
Okay.
I really do, because, you know, we did elect Mark Kelly in 2020. We did give our electoral votes to Joe Biden. And so those are kind of things that show that overall the whole state mm-hmm. leans a little bit more blue than red. The red, many of the reds, though, are often the loudest voices and the ones with the ideas that they try to enact. So.
Ideas.
Wow.
In quotes.
Ideas. Okay. Well, good. Good. It's good to hear that we're leaning more blue. So we're right in line with the Pantone color of the year. Very Perry.
Oh, what is that? Oh, Pantone.
Very Perry.
Very Perry. So, that's
very Perry.
Wishy-washy.
I haven't seen that.
It's blues with violet undertones, and it's supposed to signify change and positivity.
That's just Pantone trying to still be relevant.
Pantone. Yeah. I look at that every year, relevant or not, and I'm glad
purple. It's just funny.
So, well, let's kind of sum up. I appreciate your time, and I know you're a busy lady, Mary. So we've learned a lot today. The issues we've covered have been things that really affect day-to-day Arizonans. You know, the podcast has an Arizona focus, obviously. Definitely voter engagement, looking at this voter suppression, funding for schools, keeping good people in the legislature who, you know, work for the people. I mean, that's what it's all about, right?
Yes. Definitely. That is the focus. That's what we want. That's why I try to do what I do. So right. I can help add a body down here.
It sounds like Judy is working on the core things like education and voter rights. You got to get those things right before you can work on deciding which comic books you want to ban from schools. It kind of drives me crazy that some of the Republicans like to focus on such silly things that have no mm-hmm. impact on anything. So I guess that's it. Thank you for coming on the show. Any final thoughts you want to get out about yourself or Judy?
Thank you. Well, I'm just, you know, would encourage anyone that's listening from Arizona to pay attention to what's happening down at the legislature. You have to look for it. It's not on the news every day. Look it up, read the paper, look some things up, find out what folks are doing, because you might be surprised at what goes on if you haven't been paying attention.
I think one way to do that would be to follow their congresspeople or their senators on the state legislature. And Judy Schwiebert might be a good person to follow there as well, because her mm-hmm. tweets are a lot about what's going on currently.
Yes.
So that might be a good source.
That's a good tip. So, look that up. Find out who your legislature is and find out what they're doing. Follow them and then follow some of the good ones like Judy. And mm-hmm. you'll see what's happening. You'll be kept informed.
Great.
That's what we need. Information.
Yep.
Information, well, information and rational thought. Good information. Yes, not misinformation. Good information and some grounding and rational thought.
Great. Well, thank you.
Yeah, thank you so much, Mary. Thank you so much. I know you're busy, and I can't even tell you how much I appreciate you coming on and getting the message out.
Oh.
Hopefully to all of Arizona.
Thank you both.